Facilitate to fantasy. Travel through time. It was a fanatical fantasy. But Dr. Hathaway was determined to find fame by being the first to travel through time. Working deep in the research facilities of his university, Hathaway was an expert at using his faculty status to get research money from faithful supporters. They would do anything to facilitate his success, even though they knew that Hathaway might be fallible. The money they gave Hathaway was fantastic, and he was sure he was making progress. When Hathaway showed up to a meeting in fancy clothing from another era, his peers thought he was faking success. Hathaway faltered in his description of what he had experienced, however, and fainted. No one had factored in the possibility that he might have succeeded, but they took care of him until he could give them more factual information. Those familiar with Hathaway were fairer, however, and when Hathaway awoke to say that he had done it, they erupted with loud fanfare. Their faith in Hathaway was confirmed, and his fame spread instantly. But Hathaway was not prepared to show how he had traveled through time. He said that there was a large fallacy in his understanding of time travel that he still had to work out. After several weeks had passed and Hathaway was no longer to be found, his followers burst into the research facility. They found Hathaway lying on the ground and turned him around. They jumped back when they saw his face. He was suddenly an old man. "I can't fix the problem," he said. "Regardless of where you travel in time, you continue to age. I just spent 30 years in the future and still was not able to solve the problem." With that, he uttered his last breath, never to tell anyone how he had traveled through time.
Far-fetched to fetus, pregnant. Marianne was fertile and full of felicity. Tonight she would become pregnant. She had been fastidious in counting days, following all of the feedback of the expert and avoiding physical fatigue. Now she got on the phone and called her husband. He was at a fete for a new client, but she knew he would leave any festival occasion if there was a feasible chance that she could become pregnant. He did, and he came home in a timely fashion. Months later, they saw the fetus in an ultrasound. It was fascinating to watch their child on a computer screen, and Mary Ann even noticed several features on her baby's face. "Is it okay?" Mary Ann asked the nurse in a feeble voice. "Yes," said the nurse, and it was a very active female with a ferocious heartbeat. That was a good sign. "But you'd have to be careful," the nurse said, "so as to avoid any accidents or drugs that could be fatal to the child. Even smoking could have far-reaching consequences," she said. Mary Ann nodded, and she said she didn't smoke. When Mary Ann screamed from her bedroom the next day, Her husband raced home from the neighbors, jumping the fence between their yards. "Fetch the camera," Marianne yelled when he entered the room. He ran quickly, not knowing what far-fetched notion Marianne had had in her head. "It just moved," she said with a smile as he returned. Relieved everything was okay. "Don't scream like that again, please," he urged her. "The feasibility of losing the baby is still great, I know. But you don't want to give me a heart attack first, do you?" "Oh, I'm sorry. That was my fault. I was just so excited," Marianne said as she hugged her husband. It was all going so perfectly.
Fiber to flee. The fight of a fledgling. He was only a fledgling student of Gong Fu, but Louis thought he had the fiber to win a fight already. The fierce figure that approached him in the field was more terrifying than expected, however, and he suddenly had thoughts of fleeing. But he was firm in his resolution, and he called his friends to his flank. "Make sure he doesn't beat me too bad," he said as he flashed them a weak smile. "Louis, don't flatter yourself. You can't take this guy." Louis bent down and put his hand into the fine-grained sand at his feet. The hair on his neck was fizzling, but he knew he might need something extra to help. The big guy was also certain to have some flaw. Then the fight began. Louis was hit right away with the flat part of his opponent's hand. This embarrassed him, even as he tasted the flavor of his own blood in his mouth. When he looked up, he saw his opponent take off his jacket with flanged shoulders. He also put down a pipe that he had filed to a point. "Good," Louis thought. "You think you can beat me easily. That's your flaw." The fight went on for several more minutes. Louis's opponent began to tire. His strength was more finite than Louis's. Louis was grateful for all of his fitness training, realizing that he was in fine physical form. After Louis threw the sand in his opponent's face and punched him to the ground, the flame went out in his opponent's attack. He had lost. Louis had won.
Fleecy to forbid. My kids. My boys love to throw things, and it doesn't matter how they feel or what kind of flux emotion they are in. It doesn't matter if they have the flu, a broken leg, or even a fever. They will gladly fling fluffy things across the room. Most often they throw fleecy pillows that I can flip away, no problem. And sometimes they throw flexible items that I can catch and throw back. They really like that. Other items are so light that they float across the room for a floppy landing at my feet. But they can't throw things like rocks, toy cars, arrows, or even the Flintstones I gave them when I taught them how to make a fire. I tried to forbid throwing things. One time they threw a pile of foam that got all over the house. That made me angry. But it was still better than the time they were throwing flour. That was a mess. They spent an hour cleaning that up. Fluids are an absolute no-no. I don't want to get wet. And when they throw blankets, I always make them fold them up when they're done. They hate that. So they don't throw blankets too much anymore. I've simply found that if I'm flexible and let them play just a little bit and at appropriate level, then their moods don't fluctuate between extremes. And it's fun. I love the flicker of play in their eyes. Their flimsy accusations that their brother did it. Their constant giggling. And now they always flock to me to wrestle when we're done. It's good to have kids. And if we stay focused, play flourishes and everyone is happy.
Forecast to Fowl. An unplanned stay in the forest. There's a storm coming in, the captain said as he lowered his hand from his forehead. He was standing in the foreland looking across the sea. And it will be a foul one. There's no foreseeable chance of us getting back to town tonight. We'd better forge into the woods and find a safe spot to hole up. Knowing that he was always forthcoming about the weather and that his forecasts were always correct, we didn't hesitate to pick up the fossils we were gathering to move into the woods. The items we were carrying had been fossilized centuries before, and part of the research we needed to graduate from college. They couldn't be left behind. As we passed under the trees, Mike noted that he almost studied forestry. But then his foster parents had convinced him that studying people would be more interesting. They never thought it would take him forever to do his research in either field. It was indeed a formidable storm. They had had several forums about whether to leave or not. But each time the captain said he could foresee no way across the rough water. Luckily, the captain had some incredible formula for herbal tea. But he wouldn't part with the plants he used or how he formulated the tea. He said that it was part of his grandfather's secret formulary. He impressed them with several other incredible meals, all from the weeds and plants around them. A fortnight later, they came out of the woods. Their stay in the woods had been part of their planned trip format. But when they returned to school several weeks later, it was the part they remembered most fondly.